And we're holding on page Chof Dalad in Yevamos, Ois Nun He. Again, the perek, the subject of the perek is mostly about the dinim of miyun, and in the course of that, it ends up talking about a situation where you have a bit of a complex situation involving two brothers married to two sisters, and a whole issue where that can result in an inability to do the mitzvah of yibum, where you have a case where one of the two wives is a katana and there's an option of miyun available. So you have machlokas in the Mishnah, what should be done in that case, whether we should, according to Rav Eliezer in the Mishnah, tell the little girl to do miyun, and that way it's considered as though she was never married to her husband, and now he'll be able to do yibum with her older sister, who is his yivama. So the Gemara asks, though, the question that since when do we want to encourage miyun? Like we talked about yesterday, eventually Tosfos mentions that already the Gaonim said b'chlau we should avoid a situation even where there could ever be miyun. Don't marry off a girl at a young age, during the age bracket during which miyun would be possible. B'chlau we talked about yesterday the takana of Menachem Il Tzedek on the subject from the later Rishonim, etc. But anyway, here the Gemara says this is much earlier, but still, Tony Bar Kapara, La'olam Yidbak Adam Begimel Dvarim, a person should always stick to three things, meaning make an effort to be involved in any of the following three things, which he's going to list, V'yisrachat Min Gimel Dvarim, and stay far away from three other things. So we're going to list all six of them, and we'll talk about, after we list them all, then we'll talk about what the Chiddush is in mentioning them. So the Gemara Yidbak Begimel Dvarim, the three things. Now the point is that one of the things that the Gemara, that the Bar Kapara is going to say is to try to stay away from miyun when possible. Just to answer, the Gemara ends up answering. It's not here in Ein Yaakov, that's different over here where it's being done in order to facilitate a mitzvah. Because without that miyun, Rebbe Eliezer is saying, look, there's no way that you're going to be able to do yibum, and that kind of overrides things. Anyway, but first let's go through the list. Yidbak the Gimel Dvarim, so the three things that a person should stick to and make an effort to be involved in, b'chalitza, over havas shalom, over hafaras nedarim, to be involved in helping to facilitate a chalitza, and to bring peace between people, and to do hafaras nedarim, to be matir neder. Let's go through each one of them. Why are those good things to be involved with, to get involved in facilitating? B'chalitza ka'abashol. The reason why Bar Kapara is saying to get involved where possible in making a chalitza possible, in other words, rather than yibum, is based on what Abashol says earlier in the Masechta. It says in a Braisa, Abba Shol Omer, Hakoinus is Yevimta, L'shem Noi, when a Yova marries his Yevama, if he's doing it because she's beautiful, L'shem Isho, so just because he wants to be married, L'shem Dover Acher, or for any other ulterior motive, Kila Pegea Be'erva, then it's as if he's having relations with an Erva. Because after all, I mean, the whole Yevama wouldn't normally be an Erva to him, she's his brother's wife, which is one of the Arayas. And in the case of Yibum, the Torah especially mastered it, but still, Abba Shol said it has to be purely the Shem Shamayim without a trace of anything else. And he says, as far as I'm concerned, Abba Shol says, a child from a Yibum that's done without the proper motivations is not a Mamzer lahalocha, but he's close to being a Mamzer. In other words, there's a certain Pagam in him. Lemaisa, you have actually now the Chachamim in the Mishnah earlier in the Masechta disagree with that and say no matter what the motivations are, a mitzvah is a mitzvah. You have a difference between Ashkenazim and Sfaradim in that, because the Beis Yosef paskins like the Chachamim, and the Ramah paskins like Abba Shol. So the result is, Ashkenazim rarely, if ever, do Yibum, because who can say that they're doing it purely L'shem Shemayim, whereas Sfaradim more commonly do. People, by the way, sometimes have the notion that Ashkenazim don't do Yibum because of Chedem D'Rabbeinu Gershon, because if they're already married, then they can't marry a second wife in Yibum. Actually, the Ramah points out it's not so. Rabbeinu Gershon's Chedem is never meant to apply to such a case in the first place. If there is a situation where Yibum has to be done, and it runs into Chedem D'Rabbeinu Gershon, then the Chedem never exists in that case in the first place, and he would be allowed to. No, the reason is because Ashkenazic poskim, the Ramah, and earlier than them, the Baalei HaTosfos and so forth, paskim like Abba Shol, partly based on this Gemara over here. Anyway, so therefore, Bar Kapara is saying it's good to be involved in facilitating and arranging a chalitza. Ba'avas Shalom, why is it particularly important to be involved in bringing peace between people? Dichtiv Bakesh Shalom v'Rabfehu, the Pasuk says, seek peace and pursue it. V'Amar Rabbah Bohu, and Rabbah Bohu explains that what does it mean to pursue it? Ask you to differ. We actually learn Gzeira Shava from the word Rodfehu about what the schar is, the tremendous schar that a person has for Avor Shalom. We say every morning in davening, Avor Shalom, Shedron Al-Havera, is one of the things that a person gets the payrus in Olam Hazeh and the Keren Olam Hava. Ksiv Halcha Bakish Shalom Rodfehu, Uchtiv Hosam. We have a different pasuk, Roidif Tzedaka V'Chesed, a person who pursues Tzedaka and Chesed, Yim Tzachayim Tzedaka V'Chavod, will find life and Tzedaka and honor. Meaning Rashi says, he'll find life, which could mean both in this world and the next world, Tzedaka and Olam Hazeh and Chavod in this world. So that's where we see that a person gets a double schar for it in the next world and in this one. Why do you have to mention that point? It seems on the face of it to be unnecessary for the drasha that we're saying over here. It's just important enough to say that Avor Shalom is important, so we'll talk about it soon. Although one thing is, the Rif points out that maybe actually it is just mentioned kind of incidentally. Once we're mentioning the point about Avor Shalom, so the Gemara, by the way, brings in this drasha even though it's not Sinegeya over here. And the third one about Forest Nedarim, why is it good to be involved in being Matur Neder, rather than telling the person, go fulfill your Neder? Rav Nosson is based on what Rav Nosson says. The Tanya, Rav Nosson, Omer, Hanoidu Ki'ilu Bona Bama. When a person makes a Neder, it's as if he built a Bama, for reasons that we'll explain in a second. Vamakaimoi, and when a person fulfills his Neder, rather than being, he builds a Bama in a time when Bama Sa'asu, that is, which is an Aveda in itself. Vamakaimoi, and then when he fulfills the Neder, rather than being Matu Neder, Ki'ilu Hikra Valaya Korban, as if he compounded the Aveda and brought a Korban on that Bama.
Is there an Avera about building just a
Bama
without doing anything on it?
Well, just the building of Bama itself, in other words, is so Rashi actually brings that Choytehu, that just building a Bama itself is a chet for Pashtus, because he's making pass, making it more possible for people to do it. If he or somebody else might find it in the Makruv on it, in fact, the Ran gives an explanation on it in the Sefer Nedarim, why we're comparing it to building a Bama and bringing a Korban of all things. He says, because a person builds a Bama at a time when they're also, he thinks mistakenly that, look, I'm doing something good. I'm increasing the places where we can serve Hashem. But he doesn't realize that it's a serious Aveira. And then when he compounds it by bringing a Korban on it, then that's worse. He thinks, well, I made the Neder, I might as well stick out with it and then actually do it. But no, that just compounds the Aveira. So far the question is why we have to mention these three things. And in particular, when it comes to Avos Shalom, what's the chiddush in it? Of course, would we think that Avos Shalom is not something that you should look to try to do? So Marsha explains that, like this, each of these three things that we're mentioning, each of them actually does have a negative side to it. Sometimes you could argue that it would be better to do the opposite. Nevertheless, other things being equal, it is better to be involved in these things. When it comes to chalitza, sometimes you might tack a have, even according to Abishol, there are times when you could even argue that there are times when he's doing l'shem mitzvah, and maybe even Abishol would agree that yibum is better then. Nevertheless, ala roiv, Torah ala roiv tadaber, most of the time people are not doing l'shem mitzvah, and therefore following Abishol's logic, then we should try to stay away from yibum and try to get involved in facilitating chalitza. The same way, for example, as far as a forest nedarim, you can have a person makes a neder for a mitzvah, and you find, for example, a person makes a neder when a time of trouble. We have last week's parasha, Yaakov makes a neder, and then this week's parasha, Hashem tells Yaakov, you know, you got to fulfill your neder. So nevertheless, it's true, there are exceptions like that, like with Yaakov Avinu. Nevertheless, on the whole, it's not good to make a neder, and not good to, and even worse, if he made it, to fulfill it, rather than going and being matu neder. Now, there's an expression the Gemara has in various places, Dayecha Masha Osra L'Chotorda, you should consider it enough. What the Eibishter asked on you, you don't need to make more, you don't need to create more Isurim for yourself. Then as far as the Havas Shalom, the fact is, sometimes we have cases where you don't want it, where making Shalom is inappropriate. When you're talking about enemies of Hashem, for example, people who are fighting against Torah and Mitzvahs, Halem Sanach Hashem Esna, as David HaMelech says. Even, you know, in Perek Lamed Beis of Tanya, where the Alter Rebbe talks, spends a whole Perek talking about the importance of Avos Yisrael, and even to a Chota and a Rosha and so forth, he finishes off over there that, you know, you have certain types where you have no choice. You know, listen, it says in Tillim, Tachlis, you know, Snesim, and therefore that's how it has to be, you know. But still, al haroiv, on the whole, you should be pursuing shalom. Then he goes on to say, now why now? The question was, again, why do we need to bring Rabbi Bohu's point about the schar for it? That doesn't seem to be relevant to our Gemara over here. Marsha says there is a point of it. Otherwise, you could understand Verod Fehu means that sometimes you do have to have, not pursue peace, but sometimes, bakesh shalom, look to try to make shalom, but if you can't, if this is a person who you don't belong making shalom with, verod fehu, then go chase him and pursue him and be his enemy. So therefore, we need to stress that no, verod fehu means to pursue the shalom, and that there's a reward, there's a double reward from the Eibishter involved. Okay, then Marsha, by the way, goes on to ask, and it goes on to bring a point that's, first of all, as far as the comparison of a neder to a boma, so you're asking, is there an aveira in building a boma itself? So Marsha says, listen, maybe building a boma in and of itself is not an iser, but it makes it possible for a person to do an iser. The same way, maybe making a neder itself is not an iser yet, but it makes it more likely that he's going to end up doing an iser. Then he brings from Yefei Mare a major pirush on the Medrash that discusses. Usually we say by Shavua is the other way around. You're supposed to make a Shavua Nishva L'Kayim as a mitzvah is a very good thing, and we find by Rabbi Shuvan Levi a story in Ksuvus, which we'll get to a few weeks from now. Be'ez Hashem, where in his whole life he was never matir a Shavua, and for that when it came the end of his life. And he's walking with the Malach HaMavis, and he jumps into Gan Eden and swears that he's never going to get out of there. The Beis in Shomayla says, well, if he was never Matur Shavua in his lifetime, we're not going to force him to be Matur this one either. And so he wound up being one of the few people who got into Gan Eden alive. And here we're saying that you should be Matur and Neder. So Marsha draws the distinction because you think about what's the difference between a Neder and a Shavua anyway? We have two very similar concepts in Halacha, but there's many differences between them in Halacha. The basic difference is a shvua is on you. I will do X or I won't do X. That's a shvua. A neder is on the object. This object will be also to me, for example. So then the difference is that, one difference is precisely because of that thing. A neder sometimes can prevent you from doing a mitzvah. A person were to make a neder, for example, matzah is also to me, can't eat matzah. Person were to say, tefillin is also to me, you can't wear tefillin. So therefore, nedarim have a negative side to them. Mashenk, and a person were to say, shavua, I won't wear tefillin, shavua, I won't wear matzah, I won't want to eat matzah, the shavua is b'chal, never chal. So there's really never a case where shavua is going to prevent a person from doing a mitzvah, whereas a neder can. In addition, also, Marsha says another point is, after all, we find there are a number of cases, Taka, where Shavua is a positive thing. We have cases where you have to take a Shavua in Beis Din. The whole Torah was given with a Shavua, we swore to keep the Torah. Before a person is born, as opposed to we never find that a neder is a positive thing to do. That's how Marsha explains it. The Orach HaNer makes another distinction as well. A neder is occasionally for a divine mitzvah, but not necessarily. So yes, when it's a neder for a divine mitzvah, then it can be a good thing, but otherwise not. Normally a neder is just a person asserting himself in something inappropriately. So that's the point why Bakapara is stressing that these three things are things to get close to, meaning even though each one there might be exceptions, nevertheless on the whole it's better to be involved in chalitza, in hafaras nedarim, and in making shalom, even though in certain individual cases it might be appropriate to do the opposite. Then he continues, V'yisrachet megimul dvarim. Now, on the other hand, then there are three things, continues Bakapara, that a person should stay far away from and not get involved in. Mina mi'unim, first of all, from mi'un, which is why we're bringing in this whole piece of the here in the Gemara. Again, there might be rare cases, and that's the Gemara ends up answering. In the case of our Mishnah, Rabbi Eliezer says, you have no choice, you have to tell the little girl to do mi'un, because otherwise you're preventing yibum from happening. And fine, even though we said yibum itself is not always such a great idea, but nevertheless, at least you have to at least open up the possibility that it could happen. Whereas without that, you wouldn't have yibum or chalitza. Yeah. Anyway, so mina mi'unim, in general, stay away from mi'un. Umina pikdonis, don't be involved in taking a pikodon, a deposit for safekeeping from somebody, as the Gemara is going to explain the scenario in a minute. Umina ha'ervoinus, and also stay away from ervoinus, meaning becoming a guarantor for somebody borrowing money. Again, the Gemara is going to talk about the specifics of what case we're talking about. So let's explain. Minamunim, the reason why to stay away from miun, diomag godlo mechautaba. Imagine what happens is this girl has done miun from her husband. Then later on, she gets older, and now she regrets it. Now, let's say, for example, in between, she got married to somebody else. Now, she would actually, lahalacha, if her second husband divorces her or dies, if her second husband divorces her or dies, she would be able to return to that first husband. Because we talked about yesterday, it's one thing when her first husband divorced her, and then she did miun from the second one. We learned to Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Huda ben Maseira to set both paskin that it's also for her to return to her first husband. But if it's the other way around, if it was miun from the first husband when she was a little girl, and divorce or death from the second husband, she is allowed to return to the first husband. The point is, so what's going to happen? If she regrets her miun, she's going to start nudging and badgering her second husband to give her a get so she can return to her first husband, whom she misses, and that's not a very good thing. So therefore, we want to avoid the whole situation in the first place that she's going to do miun, and then that can cause shalom bayis problems later on when she gets remarried. Mina pikodin. What do we mean that a person should stay away from accepting a pikodin? That would be bar masa, specifically when the pikodin is being deposited with him by somebody who lives in the same city. Because his house and his house are exactly the same. Meaning, Rashi says, a person who lives in the same town is often going to be visiting your house. So he might at some point pick up his pikodin and then deliberately or forgetfully claim the pikodin again, and you're going to have a whole friction and a whole din torah over there where he has no business collecting the pikodin again. So Mela, when the person lives out of town, he's not going to be visiting your house very often, so the chances that he's going to come and pick up his pikodin and then forget about it or try to claim falsely that he didn't get it is very low. But if he lives in town, the chance is much higher. That's what the Gemara is saying. That's how Rashi explains. Marsha explains the vote differently. Mela, when the person is a guest or otherwise out of town or whatever, or even when he lives in town, but his house is not as safe as yours. Imagine, for example, somebody has a big treasure, a lot of money or a diamond or whatever, and his house, fine, he lives in town, but his house is not as safe as yours. Fine, then that's a reasonable thing to accept the pikudin from him. You're doing a yid a favor. But if he lives in the same town as you, and if his house is just as safe a place for it as yours, what's the point of accepting the pikodin anyway? All you're doing is getting yourself into something which is not really benefiting him anyhow. So according to Marsha, that's the point of keep dummy. His house is the same as yours. Tell him, what do you need to deposit it by me? Keep it in your own house. It's no safer by me than it is by you, and all I'm doing is exposing myself to the possibility that something will go wrong and you're gonna hold me responsible. Minha ervoinus, when we say that a person should stay away from getting involved in arevus. Now, again, to be an orev for a loiva can be a very good thing. A yid needs to borrow money and he doesn't have a good credit rating, so the malva is going to say, I need an orev for it, then it can be a very good thing to be involved. But specifically, the arve shel tzion. We're talking about the kind of orev of shel tzion. So Rashi gives two explanations. One is that shel tzion is the name of a place. Now, it's like this. In Halacha, and actually this is going to be discussed in Daf HaYomi over the next few days at the end of Bava Basra, it talks about various dinim of arevos. So those who can join us in the morning are more than welcome to do so. So you have like this. Normally, when it comes to an orev in Halacha, the usual rule is when the malva wants to collect the debt, he has to first go to the loiva. First, he has to go to the borrower and dun him for the money. Only if the loiva can't or won't pay up, then you go to the orev and then collect it from him, and then later on the orev will go back to the loiva and get reimbursed. The Gemara mentions in a number of places in Goyish law, at least as it was then, it wasn't like that. You could go after the guarantor first. I don't know how it is nowadays with the Lahabdil with American contract law. I'm not familiar enough with it to say for sure. But in Halacha, in any case, you have to go after the loiva first unless otherwise specified. Well, an Orev Shel Tzion is where the arrangement is that the lender can go after the Orev first. So therefore, so you're getting yourself involved in something where you may end up having a big hassle and having to give out a lot of money, and you don't know. Then afterwards, you're going to have to go and demand repayment from the loiva, and it's going to cause a whole bunch of friction. So therefore, don't do that. So again, one explanation in Rashi is an Orev Shel Tzion is so called because they used to have that kind of Orev in a place called Shel Tzion. Or Marsha says maybe it means Shel of Tzion, as in Yerushalayim. Maybe in Yerushalayim, particularly, they had that kind of Arevim. The other possibility, Rashi says, is that an Orev Shel Tzion may be so called, as the Gemara is going to say in a few lines, because Shel Tzion is an acronym, is a short form of the word Shloif Dutz. Shloif Dutz literally means pull out and stick in. In other words, you have normally the loiver is on the hook for the loan first, and the orev only second. Here, what you're doing is you're pulling out the demand for repayment from the loiver first, and you're sticking it into the orev first. The orev is getting sticking himself in that he's the one who ends up having to repay ahead of the loiver. So therefore, it's called shluf dutz. And there's also a note in Shulchan Aruch that gives another explanation that's inserted in Shulchan Aruch that gives another explanation. Shloif Dutz, we find elsewhere in Shas, is a type of detergent that they had in those days. Why they called it Shloif Dutz, I have no idea, but whatever. Maybe it was a brand name or something, I don't know. Anyway, so the vote is, it's like here, it's like a detergent. The loiver is being washed clean of the obligation to be the first one to repay, and the order is taking it on instead. Anyway, so the point is, an Orev Shel Tzion is a very bad thing to get involved in, because it's one thing to be an Orev and facilitate that a fellow Yid should get a loan. It's another thing for you to put yourself on the hook that you're going to be the first one that the lender is going to come after. Don't do that. So those are the three things we're saying. Again, Miun, Pikdoinus, and Ervoinus. The Aruch HaNer actually has a whole elaborate explanation of how these six things that Bar Kappara has mentioned actually correspond to one another, that you can actually show that there's a certain relationship between one and another, and he gives a whole elaborate explanation. One thing is when we're talking about, for example, we mentioned about Hafaras Nedarim, he points out why Hafaras Nedarim. Hafaras Nedarim is usually what you have between a husband and wife. What a Rav does, what a Beis Din does for a person to be Matir as Nedar is called Hafaras Nedarim. Why here? We specifically mention Hafaras Nedarim. So he explains that, in other words, you might have, for example, consider, we said before that when it comes to Yibum, Abba Shaul is saying, don't do Yibum unless you're doing it purely L'shem Shemayim. Well, what about a regular marriage with a wife? Do you also have to be careful that every time you're having relations with her is purely L'shem Shemayim? Well, if so, then if she makes a neder, then maybe it's not so bad. She makes a neder, which, so for example, that she's not going to wear cosmetics or whatever, big deal. If you're the kind of person who doesn't care about external appearances, then you're not going to care anyway. No, but it's not so. With a regular husband and wife, by all means, focus on her appearance and everything else, and therefore you want to be able to be made for her neder. And similarly, he explains with the other four things also, there's an actual relationship between them. Anyway, De'omer Rav Yitzchok, getting back to the Gemara. So as Rav Yitzchok said, my dichtiv, what does it mean, a posik in Mishlei, ra yeroya ki orav zor. Bad, he will be bad because he took arevus, because he took guarantorship for a stranger. So what does that mean? What kind of arevus are we talking about? There's three things that are involved, he says. Ra achara tovai, the evil upon evil, tremendous numbers of evils are going to come, l'mekabli gerim, to people who accept gerim without the proper vetting. We learned earlier in the Masechta that when a person comes to become a ger, you're supposed to try to discourage him, and you point out to him that it's not so easy nowadays in Golos to be a Yid, and see if he's not interested anymore. So now we're talking about mekabli gerim, people who go and don't do that, and they just do, you want to be a ger, fine, we'll accept you right away, no questions asked. Tosfos actually points out over here, it's not here in because he does that, because he inappropriately involves gerim, in other words, ki orav zor, Rabbi Yitzchok is darshaning the word ki orav zor, and the simple meaning means that he's taking arevos for a stranger. But Rabbi Yitzchok is pointing out the word orav can also mean to mix in, and zor, a stranger, as in a goy who wants to become a yid. So you're mixing him in inappropriately into the Jewish people without correctly vetting him first to make sure that he's sincere about it. Tosfos brings up the point, first of all, that maybe elsewhere Rashi explains the point is because then you're including the ger in the arevos. It is also in the sense of arevos as in guarantorship. You're including him. You're actually Marsha points that out over here. The fact is, Kol Yisrael arevim zel lazeh. And if you bring the ger into the Jewish people, it means you're accepting arevos on another person. With that said, though, Tosfos elsewhere says that no, arevos actually, when we say Kol Yisrael arevim zel lazeh, does not really apply to gerim. The Gemara in Sota describes that the arevos is primarily about the born Jews one to another. Okay. Anyway, Tosfos does point out over here something relevant to our parsha, though. When you're, again, you are supposed to very carefully check out the ger and make sure that his motivation is sincere. But once you've done that, then yes, you should accept him. And in fact, we find in this week's parasha, we have a Simna Hoysa Pilegish, where Timna, the daughter of the daughter of Seir over there, she's from the nobility of House Seir, she goes and becomes a Pilegish to Eliphaz, the son of Esav. Why? What happened is, the Medrash says she had wanted to become a Geyoris. And Abraham and Yitzchak and Yaakov all turned her down. So she said, you know what, if I can't become a Geyoris, then at least I'll become a Pilegish to somebody from Abraham's family. And she ended up becoming a Pilegish, a second-class wife to Eliphaz. And then her son was Amalek. And we know all the tzaras we've had from Amalek. So the Medrash points out that it wasn't such a good thing that Abraham, Yitzchak and Yaakov all turned her down. Had they accepted her, things might look very different. In any case, so the point is, the Gemara is saying, but you do have to do that vetting. You do have to do, so here, Avraham Yitzchak and Yaakov apparently either didn't bother asking her for her motivation at all, or she said that her motivation is good, and nevertheless they turned her down, so that's not a good thing. But you do have to check out their motivation and make sure that they really mean it. Anyway, from the Makabla Gerim, Ola Arve Sheltzian, and again for an Orev of Sheltzian, like we just described, Ola Tekea Atzman, the Dvar Halacha, and then you have a third person who fastens himself to a matter of Halacha, as the Gemara is going to explain soon what that means. Rashi points out that, in fact, the Gemara had quoted only the beginning of the Pasuk, Raya Yeroyaki Orav Zor. The end of the pasuk goes, "V'sonei soikim," somebody who hates the toikim, boteach will have security. So the toikim, the Gemara is explaining, means tekea atzma, the dvar halacha, which the Gemara is going to explain literally means he fastens himself to a matter of halacha. The Gemara is going to explain soon what that means. So let's go through them. Why is each of them so bad? The Kabbalah Gerim, Kerab Chelboi, what we have based on what Rab Chelboi says, which we learned earlier in the Masechta, Dormer Rab Chelboi, Koshim Gerim, the Yisrael, Kasapachas, Gerim are as difficult for the Jewish people as a Sapachas, a type of Tzaras. We talked about when we learned about it earlier in the Masechta, a number of reasons for it. First of all, the word Sapachas itself comes from a Pasuk that mentions about Gerim, Benisbechu, Abbas Yaakov, which is the same Shoresh as the word Sapachas. And Rashi over here explains because Gerim are not always so knowledgeable in mitzvahs, and then Jews learn from them. And we talked about earlier in the Masechta a variety of other reasons that Tosfos says why Gerim are not so good for the Jewish people. It impinges on the yichus of the Jewish people, and Hashem's Shechina only rests among the miyuchasim, and a point that Fakir Gerim sometimes are more careful in mitzvahs than the born Jews, and therefore they make the born Jews look bad, and a number of other considerations. Anyway, we're saying that a person who accepts Gerim when they haven't checked them out thoroughly, then that's what we're saying, Raya Roya, they're going to have evil upon evil. Next, Arve Sheltzion, and we said the second one in Rabbi Yitzchak's list was the Orev Sheltzion, and again, that's like we said before, Da'avi Shluf Dutz, where they pull out from the Loivan, stick it into the Orev, meaning again, where the Orev is taking on himself a responsibility that's not usually his, to actually be the first one that's going to be asked to repay the debt, rather than as usual in Halacha, where he's going to be only the place of last resort if the Loivan doesn't pay it. And again, like we said, shluf dutz can either mean that, pull out, stick in, because you're pulling it out from one place and sticking it into another, or again, shluf dutz is a name of a type of detergent that they had then. What's this tekeya atzma the dvar halacha? What's this one about a person sticks himself into a matter of halacha? So the Tanya, Reb Yossi Omer, so one meaning of it is that a person sticks himself into halacha, as in other words, all he's interested is in learning the halachas and not actually doing them. So, Torah. A person says, I have only Torah, then he has no, if a person says, Ein loy Torah, I have no Torah, I don't want the schar for learning Torah, Ein loy Torah, then he has no schar for learning Torah. So when I ask Pshita, well, isn't that obvious? If he's declining the schar, then he's not going to get it. So we have to fix up what Rabbi Yossi said. Kol Oma Ein Loi Ela Torah, Ein Loi Ela Torah. So fine, if he says I'm only going to learn Torah. I'm not going to be doing any mitzvahs. All I want to do is learn Torah. Then he doesn't get schar for mitzvahs, only for learning Torah. Again, the Gemara asks Honami Pshita. Well, yeah, of course, if he's not going to do mitzvahs, he can't get schar for them. to Ella, da'afilu Torah einloi. Rather, what it means is, and this is the thing, you have always the famous expression quoted all over in Chassidus and other places, kol ha'omer einli Torah, afilu Torah einloi. That's based on the Gemara's modified version now of what Rabbi Yossi is saying. If a person says, I have only Torah, meaning I'm not interested in doing mitzvahs, just in learning Torah, afilu Torah einloi, he doesn't even have the schar for learning Torah. Because Torah is supposed to bring to Maisa, Godel Talmud, should maybe they did Maisa. If he's only going to learn Torah without any interest in doing mitzvahs, then he doesn't deserve a reward for his learning Torah either.
Doesn't it say someplace if you learn Torah with the intent of not doing it, it's better for you if your placenta was turned over?
So there is the idea, yeah, the Gemara mentions elsewhere, Shalom Adam Shalom Anas Lasas Noechlesh Nefchesh Yose, yeah, exactly that expression. The Alter Rebbe talks about in Igeres Chof, why that particular turn of phrase, yeah. There is that idea. See here, the Gemara is mentioning, according one way of understanding what Rabbi Yossi says, is along those lines. After all, a person needs to learn Torah in order to connect with the Eivishter, and that means through doing the mitzvahs. If he's only going, now you have, for example, the rare kind of person like Rashbi, who learns, who's Torah, and he's potter from a variety of mitzvahs. Nevertheless, he's still chayev in certain mitzvahs maisius, the Alter Rebbe in Igeres Chof Vav, when he discusses that point about how we have nowadays we learn Ilchus Issa V'Heter and so forth in Nigla, and we work out the details like questioning and answering and then removing the klippas and so forth, and then instead you have Pnimius HaTorah, which doesn't involve any of that. So he brings in that connection where even Rashbi, who was involved totally in learning Pnimius HaTorah, nevertheless, as the Yerushalmi says, doesn't he agree that you have to break off from learning Torah to do Sukkah and Lulav and so forth? So yeah, even a person who's completely into learning Torah has to be doing Mitzvahs Maisius. Here we have these last few days in Tanya has been a rather complex piece in Kuntres Acharon that discusses the ins and outs of the respective what's accomplished by learning Torah versus doing mitzvahs versus tefillah, and you have that whole point is also discussed in some detail. Anyway, so that's what we're saying. Kol ha'omer ein lo Torah, afilu Torah ein lo, because it means he's not, first of all, he's not doing it for the purpose. The purpose of Torah is in order to do ma'aseh b'koil. And it also means he's not learning the Torah as Chochmosu, Ritzon HaShalach HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He's learning it just because it's interesting, or it's a nice, intricate legal system or whatever, and he's not learning Torah with the right motivation. So therefore, he's not getting a schar for that learning Torah. So the Gemara says, my timer, why is that? After all, isn't learning Torah a mitzvah in itself? Omar HaPapa, Omar Krob, because after all, the Pasuk says, Ulamadtem Vasisem. The Pasuk says you should learn Torah and you should do. Meaning, kol sheyeshnei v'asiyah, a person who is involved in doing mitzvahs, yeshnei v'lamidah, then you can say he's also involved in learning Torah, and in other words, he gets a schar for learning Torah as well. Kol she'enei v'asiyah, but if he's not bothering to do the mitzvahs, enei v'lamidah, then he's not really included in the klal of learning Torah. So now, it does have to be, Maharsha points out, after all, you do have to have loya ma'aretz chosid and all that, so a person has to learn Torah in order to be able to do mitzvahs. You can't say a person can do mitzvahs without learning Torah, but it has to be the other way around also, a person can't learn Torah and not do mitzvahs. Another way you could say, la'olam kid ka'amet me'ikra, after all, we could go back to our original explanation, kol ha'omer ein lo Torah, ein lo ela Torah, that when a person says, I have only Torah, then he has only Torah, he has the schar for that, but no more than that. Or de ka'amet honami pshita, and you were asking, isn't that poshut? Of course, why would he get a schar for mitzvahs if he's not doing them? The answer is, loit tzricha, the chiddush would be, to kamagmar la'achrini, suppose that he himself is not doing mitzvahs, but he teaches, he's only learning Torah, but he teaches other people Torah, va'azli va'avdi, and those other people go and do mitzvahs. Ma'u detena islay agrilidi days, he would think maybe he deserves a schar from the Eivishter because through him people did mitzvahs. Hamash Mulan, therefore we're saying no, the fact that he himself did not do mitzvahs does not get him any credit for the fact that they did mitzvahs themselves. Tosfos brings up a point. Now, there is elsewhere a Gemara in Yuma that says, first of all, we have a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos that says, call him a Zaka es Arabim. When a person brings schus to many people, then, ein chet ba yada, the Eivishter will save him, will give him extra protection that he doesn't do Averis. And the Gemara in Yuma explains the logic behind it is it wouldn't be right that the Rebbe should be in Gehenim and his Talmidim are going to be in Gan Eden. So what are we saying over here, that if he himself doesn't do mitzvahs, but he motivates other people to do that, then he's not getting a schar? So Tosfos says there's a difference between when a person was good to begin with, And then the Eibishter will help him in Chet Ba Yodel. In the case of Acher, for example, that we learned about in Chagiga, or the case of this person over here that we're talking about, to begin with, he's bad. He's learning Torah without any intent to do it. In the case of Acher, even from the beginning, as we learned in Chagiga, even before he was born, there were already tendencies of his that were going to lead to him being no good. So then we're not talking about that. Then it might well be that the Rav is in Gehenim and his Talmidim are in Gan Eden. So all of that is one explanation of Tekea Atzma, the Dvar Halacha, meaning, in other words, what he does is he treats the Torah as just something like to attach himself to in a superficial way, Tekea Atzma, like as if Tekea literally means like to knock in a tent peg or a nail or something. So he treats the Torah like just something like you're just knocking in a nail, and he himself is not getting transformed by the Torah the way he's supposed to. So then we're saying, either we're saying, Ein Loya, after the Torah, Ein Loya, or we're saying maybe he does have a schar for learning Torah, but no more than that. In any case, so again, the pasuk that we quoted before from Mishlei, Raye Royaki Orav Zor, or the Sone Sirkin Beiteach, so that refers to such a person, is one explanation. The Boisema, another explanation, Tekea Atzma Ledvar Halacha, means, that expression means, means B'dayyona De'osi Din L'Kameh. You have a Dayan where a Din Torah comes in front of him, the Gomer Halacha, so he's previously learned a Halacha which is not exactly like this, but which is similar, or Medami Milsa L'Milsa, so he goes and draws an analogy. If the Halacha is such and such in a slightly similar case, then it must be over here as well. The Islay Rabba, and though he has a Rebbe, the Ozo Mashal, and he doesn't go and ask his Rebbe to make sure that his analogy is correct. So that's Tekea Atzma, the Dvar Halacha. It's as if like he's fixed himself in his mind. I know this Halacha, and therefore it must be that we can draw an analogy from it to something else, and he doesn't realize that he might be making a wrong comparison. So that's another meaning of the Tekea Atzma, the Dvar Halacha. The Omer of Shmuel Bar Achmeni, Omer of Yonason, and you want to realize how serious a person has to take the concept of judging a Din Torah. Rav Shmuel Bar Achmeni says in the name of Rav Yonason, Lo Olam Yira Dayan Atzma, the Dayan should always picture himself, Kilo Cherav Munachas Leben Yirachoysav, as if a sword is sitting is lying between his legs, you know, with one full step, and the Gehenim psucho lemitachtav, and as if Gehenim is open underneath him. In other words, one false move, he moves a little bit to the right or the left, then he gets stuck with the sword, and then he falls into Gehenim. So he has to realize what a tremendous responsibility there is on him to make sure that he judges completely correctly. So therefore, in other words, so now when we're saying that he has a Rebbe available where he could go and check his thought process with, and he doesn't, and he figures, I can just rely on my own Chochmah, so then he's ignoring that point, and he can get himself in serious trouble. So that's the Rif points out why we need both things, why the sword and Gehenim. If there weren't a sword over there, fine, you can move aside so you're not literally over Gehenim. But because the sword is there, you can't move to the right or the left, because then you'll get stuck with the sword, and therefore Gehenim is underneath if he doesn't, Shenemar, as we find the pasuk, Hine mitose shel Shloimeh, behold the bed of Shloimeh, and Shloimeh throughout Shir HaShirim refers to the Eibishter. So the bed of Shloimeh refers to the Beis Din where Hashem is present, Alekim Nitzav Adas Kael. Shishim Giburim Savivla, there are 60 mighty men standing around it, referring to the Dayanim. Migiburi Yisrael, remember, from among the mighty men of Yisrael. And the pasuk continues, they're all carrying swords, the pasuk says, kulam achuzei cherev, they're all grasping a sword, melumdei mochama, they're all trained for war, ish chaber al yurecha, each one has a sword on his thigh, mipachad balelos, because of fear in the night. What does that mean? Mipachad shal gehenim, shadom alalila, because of fear of gehenim, which is compared to the night. So we see, in other words, that he has both. He has a sword that's ready, that's al yurecha, ready to stick him, with a moment's inattention, and then on top of that, he has the night of Gehenim opened up underneath him, so he has to realize what a responsibility he has, and if he's not taking every step possible to make sure that he's correct, then he's in trouble, and that's the chaos of the Dvar Halacha. Why are we using Shishim Giburim? So Rashi explains that represents the members of the Sanhedrin. Tosfos asks, wait a minute, then aren't there 70 members of the Sanhedrin? So Tosfos says, no, the 60 mighty men represent, each one represents 10,000 Jews. We know by Yetzias Mitzrayim there were approximately 600,000 Jews, so therefore the 60 represents one man representing each 10,000. Mao Shaw in Sanhedrin, this Gemara is also in Sanhedrin, but points out a different point. Another understanding of it is there's actually a medrash that says that you have what it says shishin giburim, but then it also says migiburi Yisrael. So yeah, it means 60 plus another 11, making up the full complement of the Sanhedrin of 71.
Sleep is a 60th of death, right?
That's true also, but that's that.
But the shishim.
Yeah, that too. Yeah. Orach HaNer also points out over here another way of looking at it is why the 60 over here, he brings from a medrash that you're supposed to have on the Sanhedrin of 70. Ideally, you should have one Kohen from each of the 24 Mishmaris, one Levi from each of the 24 Mishmaris, and one member of each of the 12 Shvatim. So there's your 60, which is why the Pasuk refers to 60, and then you have another 11, which are going to be you're going to be doubling up on some of the Shvatim or some of the Mishmaris or what have you. Anyway, so Marshall also refers over here to the point that especially when it comes to Dinim Mominus, you do have the expression at the end of Bava Basra. Again, we're going to have it in Daf Yomi in a few days. Harotze Shiyachim Yasek the Dinim Mominus. A person wants to be wise, he should involve himself and delve into Dinim Mominus, the tremendously fruitful area of Torah. But nevertheless, then the Mishnah continues. Harotze Shiyachim Dinim Mominus. A person wants to be wise in Dinim Mominus. Yishamas Shimon Ben Nanas. Let him go study under an expert like Shimon Ben Nanas, as it mentions there in the Mishnah. So the point is, here you have a person can become a tremendous chacham from delving into and understanding the ins and outs and the complexities of Dinim Mominus, but with all of that, don't rely on your chachma, go learn from a Rebbe like Shimon Ben Nanas, which is what the Gemara is saying over here, that you're a dayan on a Beis Din, you have a responsibility to not just rely on your own chachma, but to go and ask your Rebbe if he's available, and then as the Gemara is saying, if not, then there's trouble brewing. Yom Yom Mashiach Ge'ula, Tes Kislev, today being the birthday and the yahrzeit of the Mitzvah Rebbe. So the Rebbe talks about Nasicha and Nun Beis that we can learn from the Mitzvah Rebbe, that we have the connection of Ruchnius and Gashmius in perfection. Everything is already ready for the Ge'ula. So therefore, we can learn from the Mitzvah Rebbe to do things to bring it out with Poyol Mamash. Namely, that a person has to work in such a way and make special effort that his ruchnius and his siddishkeit should be expressed in his gashmius. Meaning that in his gashmiistic things, he's involved with gashmiistic things, with making a living or whatever, you should feel the warmth and the chayus that comes from his Yiddishkeit and from his Chassidishkeit, so that there's no distinction between them. They become Dover Echad Mamash. This is a famous thing that the Mitzvah Rebbe wanted, that his Chassidim should be involved in Yichudei Law, even while they're at their business and things like that. So the Rebbe is saying that here we have, that's ultimately how it's going to be, the Moshe Mashiach, that you have that completion of that complete unity between them, so we have to work on evoking that even now. Halachos, continuing on halachos of Muktzeh from Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, wooden boards, are those Muktzeh or not? So it depends. If they're regular boards that you have around the house and you're not planning to sell them, then they're not Muktzeh. You're allowed to move them because they have a function on Shabbos. You could use them to cover something. You could use it as like a makeshift bench or something like that. But if they belong to a professional who plans to sell them, then they would be all, like for example, so a carpenter's stock of wood would be also, again, as we learned yesterday, unless, for example, he's going to set it aside and designate it for a different use before Shabbos. Otherwise it would be Pashtus Muktzeh Machmas Chesaron Kis. Another din in this connection. In general, you're allowed to touch Muktzeh. You're not allowed to move Muktzeh, but you're allowed to touch it if you're not going to move it thereby. So, for example, let's say a Leichter. You would be allowed to touch it on Shabbos, even if the candles are burning in it. Or similarly, for example, if you have something sitting on top of a Muktzeh item, you're allowed to pick it up. You may touch the Muktzeh item, but you're not moving it, that's fine. But, for example, if you have, let's say, a chandelier, that you wouldn't be able to move because that you wouldn't be able to touch because a little touch makes it shake. Another thing you can do, we talked about earlier in the Siman, that you can't take something that's Muktzeh out of a place where it's going to get ruined to put it someplace where it'll be safer. For example, if that's called in Halacha, Mechama Letzel, to take it out of the sun and put it in the shade so it doesn't overheat or whatever from the sun. You are allowed to, though, on Shabbos, you're allowed to put something on top of it to protect it. So say it's sitting outdoors and it's going to get rained on, then you'd be allowed to take a bowl and cover it with that so it doesn't get wet. Because again, you're not touching the Muktzeh item itself, and that's, it's not not mevatel kli mehechone. We talked about yesterday, about no, 2 days ago, about not about you can't make a keli unusable on Shabbos by having that muktzah will fall into it. But here it's the opposite. The muktzah is not in it. It's covering the muktzah. You'd be able to remove it anytime you want. So therefore, there's no issue with any of that. Not about.